Wednesday, June 24, 2015. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday, and we bring you just a little bit different of an outlook on the world of sports than you're going to get anywhere else. Are you tired of the same nonsense that you hear on the other sports stations? Do you want to be a little bit more informed, maybe, than you're going to be if you tune into those stations? You need to check out the Daily Dose Sports Podcast. We bring you some insight that you're not going to get anywhere else. If you need something to listen to while you're at work and you're sitting at your computer, you're on the treadmill and you're putting in those steps and you're tired, and I know it's cool listening to music, but sometimes you just want to take your mind somewhere else. We can help you out with that. If you're sitting stuck in traffic, you need the Daily Dose. A couple different ways that you can contact me if you would like to hit me up for anything. You can find me on Twitter at Daily Dose Sports. That is D-A-L-Y. Don't need to add the E or the I or any of that stuff. D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. Same name for Facebook. You can find me there as well. If you would like to go over to our Daily Dose Sports website, go over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com. Put up new articles there every week. If you haven't seen it yet, I encourage you, go over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com and check out our NBA draft preview that came out on Monday. You might enjoy that. You might want to see that and see what you think. Some picks on there that might be a little bit different than what you find anywhere else, but I think you'll enjoy it. If you would like to email the show, dailydosesports@gmail.com. I've had a few people email me, ask me some questions, ask for some certain things. We're going to have an email show coming up in the next month or so. You're going to want to make sure you're tuning in for that. You know, this week, we actually have a ton of things to get to. I've got a lot of things that I want to talk about this week because we have a lot of things going on in the world of sports. And some of them might be a little bit under the radar, but some of them are the big ones. Of course, we're going to talk NBA draft. The draft is tomorrow night. Going to be interesting to see where some of these players end up. We also want to hand out some NBA postseason awards. We always do that. Season comes to an end, and last week, you know, we saw the Warriors finish things out against the Cavaliers. We have some postseason awards that we're going to hand out. Got to talk a little bit of Major League Baseball. And, of course, our Daily Dose Top 5. You don't want to miss that. You never know where the Daily Dose Top 5 is going to go, but this week, I think it's going to be one that you're going to want to stick around for. A couple things coming out in the world of sports today. Tom Brady, New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady, sat down for 10 hours yesterday with NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell to try to appeal his 4-game suspension with the whole Deflategate thing. I guess reports are that Brady came off as very genuine, very earnest, very persuasive, and it was an A-plus performance. I've told you my feelings on Deflategate. I think there, you know, it's not quite as bad as some people make it out to be. It's not quite as small as Patriots fans would have you believe. It's somewhere in the middle. I do think there is something to it. I do think that the Patriots have a knack for trying to get away with some things. At the same time, should they be, you know, banned from the league, as Patriot haters will tell you? No, it's nothing like that. I do think that you have to punish him. What I would expect coming from this hearing is I expect that four game suspension on Tom Brady to be reduced to just one or two games, and I think Roger Goodell will give him a nice hug and say I'm really sorry, Tommy, that you had to go through this. There's such a mentality out there, and I know Patriot fans are like, you know, Goodell's trying to get us, the NFL's out to get us. What is their end game? Like what do they want? They want to like get rid of you. They want you to be bad. They don't want Brady and the Patriots to be relevant anymore. It doesn't make any sense. Once again, I think you probably got caught doing something a little bit shady, and now you're having to answer for it, but I do expect that to be reduced. Speaking of the NFL, and you might not have heard this, but, you know, we're here in Denver. The show is here in Denver, and we have, you know, listeners here in Denver, but a lot of people listen all over the place. But if you're not in Denver, you might not have heard this. Apparently, there is and I'm not even going to say his name. There is a local reporter here in Denver that does some sports work here in Denver, and I'm not going to say his name because I don't think his name deserves to be said, that is reporting that the Denver Broncos tried to trade Peyton Manning this past offseason, tried to trade him to the Houston Texans. He cites two unrelated official sources for the report and added that certain elements of the Broncos organization wanted Brock Osweiler to begin starting in 2015. That's the rumor. Now, we have gone, people have gone out and said, okay, let's talk to the Broncos. Broncos, did you have these talks? Did you have these talks with Houston? And the Broncos said, no, that never happened. And then they go to Houston and they say, well, Houston, did you have these talks with the Broncos? Were you discussing a possible trade for Peyton Manning? And Houston said, no, that never happened. See, this is the problem with not just sports media, but media in general, is the fact that we're starting to have these situations where we say, hey, I can just make up a story and it makes headlines. Because unrelated official sources, that's not a source. Don't you have to vet these processes out? Don't you have to say, okay, I'm going to check it with this. Okay, so-and-so said this, and now I got to check it against this. I can't just go out and start reporting this stuff. This is hideous, hideous journalism. You can't do this. If that's the case, and I don't have to cite any official sources, I don't have to vet the process at all, then I'm going to go ahead and report that today a leprechaun was riding a unicorn and delivering a professional sports championship to the city of Cleveland. As long as we're dealing in make-believe, I guess I can say anything I want. Speaking of rumors, rumor mill, of course, is heating up in the NBA with the draft coming up. And Sports Illustrated was actually reporting that there is a chance that Miami Heat, three-time champion, guard Dwayne Wade, could possibly go to the Los Angeles Lakers. Before July, Wade can't opt out of his contract for next season, and he could become an unrestricted free agent. And the Lakers, they say they have roughly $22 million in spending power if they choose not to pick up the $9 million option on Jordan Hill. Oh, that's perfect. This is a perfect fit. I like this a lot. I like the idea that we have, Kobe Bryant, who can't hardly get through three or four games without getting hurt. And then spelling him will be Dwayne Wade, who can never get through any. Do you see the problem here? You already have Dwayne Wade in Kobe Bryant. Bryant is Wade. Einhorn is Finkel. I don't understand the point of this. Another rumor out there is that Sacramento Kings coach George Karl is shopping DeMarcus Cousins, and one of the places he is shopping Cousins, he wouldn't mind sending Boogie out to Denver for his former point guard in Denver, Ty Lawson, or maybe Kenneth Faried. I don't know if this is going to happen. This doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I know from a Denver perspective, yes, we're fine with that. Because as much talk as there has been about moving Lawson, I think you probably have to move Lawson at this point. I don't think you have a choice. But at the same time, why would it make any sense for the Kings to do this? You have a young big man with a ton of talent that if he can figure out how to work with George Karl, he could be very, very, very good. Might want to figure out a way to make that work. As a Nuggets fan, yes, please. I'm fine with that trade. I don't think it's going to happen. Did you see this? And you might have missed this. Because the world of boxing, we only tune in at certain times. But, they're talking about maybe Floyd Mayweather had one more fight in him. Do you know who he's considering? Do you know who he's talking with maybe as his final fight? He's talking with 42-year-old Oscar De La Hoya. Maybe he's going to come back and be his final fight. And De La Hoya said on Tuesday he's seriously considering a comeback. He hasn't fought in 6.5 years. He says right now it's 50-50. Who last retired after Manny Pacquiao knocked him out back in 2008. And the reason I say it's 50-50 is because I have to sit down with my family, which I'm going to do next week, and seriously talk to them about the pros and the cons of this. Do I want to fight Floyd Mayweather? Now, we've talked boxing, we've talked Mayweather, we've talked Pacquiao, all that stuff. Mayweather, he doesn't have the fighters on his career that you can sit there and say, okay, he is definitely without question one of the greats. He doesn't have. This isn't going to help. You would be better off going out and getting like 60-year-old Sugar Ray Leonard. That would be a better fight. Or Marvin Hagler. You know, the only fight that I want to see less than Mayweather and De La Hoya is probably Mayweather and Pacquiao too. Can we just stop? Will you stop ducking people? Get in the ring with a real fighter. Get in the ring with a real fighter, or else just retire and let's call it. Not sure if you saw this, but USA Team USA Women's World Cup team did win their game on Monday against Colombia, 1-2. But in the process, they lost forward Megan Rapinoe and midfielder Lauren Holiday for their semifinal game on Friday with China. And I'll be honest, and like I told you before, I'm hesitant to admit this, but I have watched a few of these games. USA is fallible. They had better be very, very careful versus China on Friday. Not that China is this overly talented team, but they're very disciplined, and you don't want to get into the situation. The problem with USA, they can't score goals. And now you have Rapinoe out. She's the one person that was getting you some offensive output. But the problem, you can't score goals. If this comes down and it's like a 0-0, or it's like a 1-1, don't find yourself on the short end losing, you know, in the eight out of this tournament. And it could happen. Team USA better be very, very careful on Friday. We'll see how that goes. Let's jump in and get to a few things. Major League Baseball. My personal favorite baseball player in the history of time right now hit his 3,000th hit on Friday. Yep. New York Yankees, Alex Rodriguez became the first player since Derek Jeter did it in 2011. And he even did it on a home run at Yankee Stadium. Take that. I mean, there's only 29 players that have even done it. And you know, when we're looking at this list of players who have done it, I mean, it's pretty amazing. I mean, Pete Rose, Ty Cobb, Hank Aaron, you know, Stan Musial, of course, you know, Willie Mays and Cal Ripken Jr., you know, Tony Gwynn, Dave Winfield. I mean, the list is amazing of players who have actually hit for 3,000 hits. And now we have Alex Rodriguez added to that list. And you know what I love about this the most? I love this because Yankees fans have literally no idea what to do. Like, they don't know whether to cheer, whether to boo. And you know, the Yankees are starting to come back to earth a little bit after that huge start. They got out to a big start at the beginning of the season. Here's the problem. They need A-Rod. They need him to keep hitting and playing well. And, you know, getting 3,000 hits, it's like a guarantee you're getting into the Hall of Fame, right? I mean, the only players to hit 3,000 hits and not be elected into the Hall of Fame, Pete Rose, of course, Rafael Palmeiro. And speaking of Pete Rose, so the thing is Alex Rodriguez going in the Hall of Fame? Because the great part about this, my favorite part about this, he's hitting all this and playing right now. He's clean, right? Right? I hope so. Or maybe not. Either way, let's talk a little bit about Pete Rose. Because, you know, for 26 years, we have heard constantly that Pete Rose only bet on baseball as a manager. Now, just this week, ESPN Outside the Lines obtained documents that show Pete Rose was betting on games from March of 86 to July of 86 when he was playing. Sorry. That's the nail in the coffin, for Rose getting to the Hall of Fame. I thought for years that Rose, because of what he had done with the gambling thing, I thought maybe they would let him in, you know, after he passed, or, you know, kind of that posthumous, you know, election then. But now, you can't, I don't even know if you can do that. I mean, Commissioner Rob Manfred, baseball commissioner, if he were to allow somehow for Rose to get in somehow, you're stepping on everybody else's toes that came before you. So you can't even do that. I think this is over. I don't think Pete Rose ever gets in. The only way that you could possibly put him in now is you have like an exhibit of what not to do. And I hear, you know, I've heard a lot of people, a lot of talk on Twitter. There's a lot of people. I even had an email to me. What is the big deal? Why is gambling such a huge deal in sports? I mean, he only bet on his own team. Why is it such a big deal? I mean, he has the most hits in baseball history. Can we just kind of put this stuff aside and put him in maybe as a cautionary tale or something? Why is it such a big deal? Let me give you a few reasons why it's so important. Because, like, do you remember a few years back when, like, Rick Neuheisel was coaching at Washington at the time? He was coaching football at Washington, and he had entered into a March Madness pool where he paid money, and then they found out about the pool. He ended up getting fired. He sued, and he actually won his lawsuit. But what's the big deal? Here's the problem. Here's the problem. And I tell you this, as a former coach, at least had some involvement with the college game a little bit, talking to other coaches and knowing what they go through a little bit. Why is it such a big deal? First and foremost, the integrity of the game can be pulled into question. Are you changing the kind of outcome? Because, you know, they say, well, Pete Rose, he only bet on the Reds. He only bet on his own team. First off, if he only bet on his own team, he's an idiot. Because you don't go 162-0. So I don't believe that. For one, I don't believe anything that comes out of Rose's mouth, but I don't believe that for a second. Secondly, are you changing any type of outcome in the game? Because it's not just a win-loss bet. In fact, most bets aren't the win-loss bet. Many of the bets are point spread. So you may not think that, like, missing a layup in a 14-point game is a big deal, but when the point spread was 13.5, it's a big deal. And you know who's going to care? Vegas. And if Vegas stops caring about your sport is over. Don't forget, you know, we talk about the 1919 Black Sox and that betting scandal that was going on in the World Series and stuff. The thing that, why that's so important was because that almost ruined baseball. It almost completely ended the game. Like, they were looking at shutting down the league and saying, forget it, because all of these games are tainted. You're messing with the integrity of the game. If it's all fixed, then why are we doing it? And here's the other problem as far as for, like, a coach or for, like, a player. What if you start losing? And I don't mean, you know, losing games. I mean losing money. It may affect your decisions. Like I said, if Rose only bet on himself, he's a fool. And he's a really, really poor bettor. I don't necessarily believe that, but that's why it's such a big deal. You can't bring in the integrity of the game. If it's being questioned, you have huge, huge problems. Because as much as we may all love the game for, you know, the athletic and the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat and all that, yeah, I got news for you. Money talks. And when they say it's not about money, it's more about money. This is about money. And if Vegas doesn't care about your sport, it's all over. And that's why it can't ever, ever, ever be tolerated. You can jack yourself up with PEDs. You can pump horse blood into yourself. I don't care about all that stuff. You can't be messing with the integrity of the game. That's when it gets a little bit shady. Let's jump over to the NBA. We got a lot to talk about in the NBA. I told you last week, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about how the NBA has changed. I want to talk about that a little bit today. Because the NBA has changed. Did you see, though, this week, New York Knicks president Phil Jackson stated in an interview. Now this was back a couple months ago. The interview is just coming out now that he stated this. But he stated in this interview that the NBA is too individualized. It's undisciplined. And what we basically have is we have four guys watching one guy dribble. LeBron James travels nearly every time he catches the ball. Now, I realize, and you're going to hear a lot of sports media, you're going to hear the talking heads on TV, and they're going to tell you today, oh yeah, Phil's just old and grumpy, and he's out with the Knicks, and he's just mad because they're so awful, and he's just an old man screaming, get off my lawn. And there is a certain amount of truth to that. Yes, he probably is grouchy. Yes, he's with one of the worst franchises in sports right now. Here's the problem. He's right. And here's what's bad. We actually, you know, they were talking in these past couple weeks after the Cavs lost and everything. They were talking about, should the Cavaliers keep David Blatt? Well, I don't know. Should the Cavaliers keep, because, you know, he doesn't seem like he coaches a lot. It seems like LeBron James is more the coach than David Blatt is. And then we actually had people saying, well, you know, the thing is, LeBron James doesn't even need a coach. Really. I mean, he can coach himself. He doesn't really need a coach. I've got news for you. LeBron James may not want a coach. Oh, but he needs one. Phil's exactly right. LeBron James isn't very fundamentally sound. He literally moves both of his feet every time he touches the ball. And you're telling me LeBron James wouldn't be better under someone like Phil Jackson? Pat Riley? Lenny Wilkins? Jerry Sloan, Chuck Daly. You're telling me LeBron James wouldn't improve playing for someone like Greg Popovich? Get out of here with that. That's nonsense. So I think LeBron James has his perfect situation. He likes to have that coach. And I think back to like Mike Brown. You think obviously to David Blatt right now. You think even of like a Eric Spoelstra when he was down in Miami. And they all kind of seem like they're that guy that they don't seem like they have much power. And we kind of question whether or not they're very good at their job. And do they really know what they're doing? And I think LeBron loves that. Because I think LeBron, he doesn't really want to be coached. He wants to have the situation where he runs everything. And if there's any questions as to the coaching stuff, you know, yeah, put it on that clown. He's just here taking up space. I'm the guy that really knows what's going on. It's a little bit crazy. I think LeBron loves the situation he has with David Blatt. I think he would improve so much more if he actually had a real coach. You know, I told you last week, and I just said, the game has changed. We've talked about this. The game has changed. You know, I talked about a month ago about why I love Steph Curry. Because what he brings to the game, yes, it's fun to watch. It's fun to watch Steph Curry play basketball. He's just that kid that you don't know what he's going to do next. But more importantly, what I love about Steph Curry is that kids that normally, like, you know, the little league kids and the middle school kids and the high school kids that would be wasting their time trying to dunk over and over and over. No, don't put any time on their game. They're just trying to dunk. Oh, yeah, I almost got one down. I know that when I was coaching, I'd have a kid stay after practice. We'd do a 2-hour practice, run them to death. They can't hardly move. And then afterwards, somehow they'd find some energy and they'd be like, oh, I'm going to stay after like an hour and see if I can get a dunk down. What I like about Steph Curry's game is now you have kids watching that and saying, you know what? Instead of trying that dunk again and again and again, I'm actually might work, you know, on my passing, on my ball handling, on my shooting. I love that aspect to what Steph Curry has brought just in the last year or so. But the game is changing. And we really see it in the NBA. And it's not because of Steph. We might think it's because of Steph Curry. It goes way, way, way back before that, though. And the player, I told you, the player that I think changed it might not be who you think. I want you to think about this. And yes, I'm going to go and kind of go story time on you here. But I want you to think about this just a little bit. You know, when you think of the game of basketball, it's always about who's the biggest. Who's the big guy? Oh, you see a big guy walking, you know, through the store. Oh, he must play basketball. Wouldn't you hate to be that 6'10 guy that never played basketball? Because that's what everybody asks you. Oh, do you play basketball? Oh, do you play basketball? Oh, you must play basketball. Yeah, no, I'm a lawyer. But we've always considered that it's the biggest guy that's going to be the best at this game because the game is putting a ball into a 10-foot hoop. So if you're taller, you have that advantage. So it's always been either the biggest guy or the most dominant athlete that could play above the rim usually won. And when you think back about this, I mean, think of like the 50s with George Mikan. Think of like the 60s with Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain, Willis Reed. Getting into the 70s, you had Kareem, you had Wes Unseld, you had Willis Reed still going a little bit in the 70s. In the 80s, you started to see the change where it wasn't always the big guy, but it was the athletic guy, the guy that could play above the rim, the guy that could take over the game due to his athleticism. You had Magic, who was a 6'8", 6'9", guy playing point guard. You had the James Worthies, the Isaiah Thomases, who was just an amazing player. Little guy, but an amazing player at what he could do. And yes, he could actually get up himself. And in the 90s, you started seeing the Michael Jordan, Shaquille O'Neal, even the Kobe Bryant, the great athletes, or the big sky. But we've started to see that change a little bit. We've started to see that change just a little bit. And the reason that you might think of, it might not be exactly what you think. Because it didn't start changing, believe it or not, with Steph Curry. It didn't start changing, even going a little bit before that, with like the San Antonio Spurs, who are not the biggest team, not the most athletic team. It started to change back, way, way back. I want to take you back a little bit before that. I want to take you back to 1988. And now you might, if you're like older, like if you're, let's say 35 plus, you hear 1988 and you probably like, oh, I don't know, that was like, what, 10 years ago? Yeah, that was like, 27 years ago. That was a while back. But I want to take you back to 88 and the 1988 Summer Olympics. They were in Seoul, South Korea that year. And we sent over our Team USA basketball team where they lost to the Soviet Union by 6 and only won the bronze medal. The Soviets win the gold. Soviets had a pretty good team. They had some veteran players. They had some grown men. Sarunas Marcellonis, Arvydas Sabonis. Average age of that Russian team with Soviet team, age 26. These were professional players. They weren't NBA players, but they were professional players. And on the Team USA side, average age of these players was 21. Here's the players that were on that team that lost in the 88 Olympics. Mitch Richmond, who was, I believe, was 23 years old at the time. You had two Charles Smiths. You had the kid from Pitt, and you had the kid from Georgetown. Bimbo Coles, Hersey Hawkins, Jeff Greer, Willie Anderson, Stacey Ogman, Dan Marley, Danny Manning, J.R. Reed, and David Robinson went over to Seoul, South Korea, and lost, and ended up just getting the bronze medal. Now, Here's the thing. It wasn't just that game. It wasn't just a one game thing. Team USA also lost in the 1990 FIBA World Championships to Yugoslavia. And then in 1991 at the Pan American Games, Team USA lost to Puerto Rico. So here was the thing. In 1989, FIBA ruled that NBA players could now play in international competition. Because up until then, you were only allowed to have amateurs. And pro leagues you could play, but not the NBA. If you were in like the Russian pro league, you could play. If you were in the Italian pro league, you could play in the Olympics. But the NBA, you were not allowed to. In 1989, they lifted that. And so the U.S. kind of sick now of getting beat at the last two or three times they've gone to international competition. The Olympic Committee decides, hey, you know what? We're going to put together a squad. And we're not going to have tryouts like we used to have. You know, they used to have tryouts where you'd come in, you know, the best college players, that kind of, we're going to eliminate those tryouts. We're going to have a select team and we're going to invite only and we're going to pick the greatest players that we can assemble. And when the 92 Olympics comes around, we're going to send over some big dogs. Now, they start inviting players. They start inviting the Michael Jordans, the Magic Johnsons, the Larry Birds, but there's a problem. There's one problem when you're doing this. See, many of these players have contracts with shoe companies. And that might not sound like a big deal, but the Olympics was sponsored by Reebok. And so a lot of these players were getting these invites and they were saying, I want to go, but it's not an event that you know, Nike isn't thrilled about us going. And some of these players started hearing back from Nike, and Nike was saying, yeah, I'm not sure that's going to work out for you. And so a lot of these players are going, I'm not sure I'm going to go. I mean, when you look at like Michael Jordan, he'd already played once. He had already gone over and got an Olympic medal once back in 84. So it wasn't as huge of a deal to him. But one player gets the invite. One player gets this invite. And he decides, you know what? I'm going. And so when he talks to his Nike people, they tell him, yeah, I'm not sure that you can really go over and participate in the Olympics. Because it's a Reebok situation and you're a Nike guy. And this player tells Nike, well, then tear up my contract because I'm going. And from that point, Nike changes its stance completely. They do a complete 180. They're like, well, no, you can go. You can go. That's fine. And as a result, Magic signs on and says he's going to go. Jordan signs on and says he's going to go. Charles Barkley signs on and says he's going to go. Scottie Pippen, Chris Mullin, Karl Malone, John Stockton. You put together this group. I mean, Larry Bird, Clyde Drexler, Patrick Ewing, David Robinson gets to go back, and then the college kid, Christian Laettner, gets to go. And this team goes over to the 92 Olympics in Barcelona. And to say that they dominate, it honestly doesn't do justice because they absolutely crush the competition. I mean, the games that they play, the games that they're winning by an average of 42 points a game. I mean, you have players from the other teams coming out to see this 92 team. And not only they're having to come out and play against them, they want to come out and get pictures. They want to come out and get autographs. They want to come out and see if they can get a jersey. I mean, playing against your heroes are what these other countries are having to do. So So the 92 team, the dream team, as they were labeled, makes it to the gold medal game. They beat Croatia. And the funny thing about beating Croatia in that game, Croatia loses by 22. And that was the lowest point margin there had been with any of these games up until this point. In fact, the Croatian players were so happy that they only lost by 22 in the gold medal game that they actually were coming out and taking pictures of the scoreboard because they were like, that's so, so amazing that we only lost by 22. But yeah, how did this change the NBA? I mean, how did this go about changing the NBA? Okay, so we took the dream team over there. Big deal. Well, see, here's the thing. Because Team USA was bigger. They were more dominant. They were the bigger team. We talked about the bigger team usually had more success. The more athletic team, the more powerful team had more success. And that was definitely the case in the 92 Olympics. The bigger, stronger, faster team won. But you see, there were young players all over the world that were watching the Olympics. They were glued to the Olympics because it was amazing that you could see like all of your favorite players in one game. I mean, you could see all of those players. You could see Bird playing with Jordan, with Pippen, with Barkley, with Drexler. I mean, it was truly amazing. And there were young kids all over the world that were watching this. And there was a kid in Germany named Dirk Nowitzki watching this. There was a kid in France named Tony Parker watching this. Manu Ginobili in Argentina has said that he watched the 92 Olympics. The Gasol brothers over in Spain. Serge Ibaka in Africa. Boris Diaw also in France. Andrew Bogut in Australia. Leandro Barbosa also over in Brazil. Any of these names sound familiar to you? See, many of these players, they watched the 92 Olympics. And they thought, you know, I can't compete athletically with what those guys do. I can't jump like Jordan. I don't have the athleticism that a Scottie Pippen has. I certainly don't have the size and the dominance of someone like Patrick Ewing or David Robinson. I can't do those things physically. But I can play a different style. And I can play a style that has spacing. I can play pick and roll and pull you out away from the basket, and I can find mismatches, and I can find ways to attack better players. You're starting to see these big men that have better passing skills. You're starting to see these big men that can put it on the floor a little bit, can shoot from outside. It's not just a back to the basket, go down to the low post, and stay there. You've started to see that transition. And I can even the playing field by playing a different brand of basketball. And you know what? The NBA has changed completely. Take a look at some of the winners that we've seen. Think of that Pistons team back in 2000 under Larry Brown with Chauncey Billups. That team didn't have any athleticism beating the Lakers. They had no business beating the Lakers. Think of these teams that Greg Popovich has put out with the San Antonio Spurs. The spacing, the discipline, the cuts, again, a big man can step out and hit a 19-20 footer. We can move, we can run some pick and roll, we can find mismatches, we can get some you know open looks and knock down those open shots. And of course this year with Golden State, here's the prime example. You're going against the most physically dominant player in the game in LeBron James. But because of the style that you play, you can beat him. Because of the spacing, because of your passing ability, because of your screen and roll ability, because of your ability to knock down shots in space, you can beat the more bigger, the more powerful, the stronger athlete. And it all goes back to that 88 Olympics when we lost in South Korea. Now that player that told Nike, tear up my contract because I'm going, that kind of opened the door for all those other players in the 92 Dream Team to say, well, if he's going and he has that deal with Nike, then I guess I'm going too. Most important player might have changed the game as we know it today, at least. And I know these things are cyclical. I know we're going to get back to a big man era. We're going to get back to that athletic era. But don't forget, the game is changed right now. That player that did that, John Stockton. John Stockton told Nike, well, tear up my contract because I'm going to the Olympics no matter what because I want to play in the Olympics. I want to represent my country. It was so big to him that he did it. And when he did it, Nike totally changed its stance on whether or not players could go over there. Change the game. Change the game of how we see basketball today. It is totally, totally different than what we watched back in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, even the 90s. A different game. It has more of a European flavor than it probably ever has before. I like certain aspects of it. It's fun to watch. I know the Spurs are boring. I get that. Boringly, really, really good. As we do all the time, when we have a season end and we hand out, some regular season, postseason awards, postseason end, sometimes we want to hand out some awards for that too. We got to hand out a few postseason awards. Because NBA playoffs this year, I thought were phenomenal. NBA finals was okay. At least it had, some drama. Highest rated finals, by the way. Highest rated finals since 1998 when Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls faced John Stockton, Karl Malone, and the Utah Jazz. Highest rated finals since then. The NBA finals, you can say, about it what you want. A lot of people were tuning in. Most watched finals since 98. And I have to think a lot of the reason for that is because of the style that the Golden State Warriors played with. It's a little bit different of a style. I think there is also that polarizing figure of LeBron James. So either I'm watching because I want to see him win or I'm watching because I want to see him lose. Highest rated finals. Because of that, we gotta hand out some postseason awards, don't we? Got to give out some postseason awards. Wrap up the season, put a nice big bow on it, finish it off. First off, most valuable player. I told you last week my most valuable player off the floor, at least, was Golden State Warriors. What do we call him? Honestly, GM, decision maker, player personnel guy, Jerry West. That's my MVP. The talent that he has somehow assembled at Golden State, a franchise known for being mediocre. But my MVP on the floor, I know it should be Andre Iguodala or it should be LeBron James because he was super valuable in losing. My MVP has got to be Steph Curry. Steph Curry, 26 points per game on just 20 shots per game. I know that is a totally foreign concept to us in this age of Carmelo Anthony's and Kobe Bryant's and Allen Iverson's. I know it's a bizarre concept, but you do actually get 2 points or maybe 3 points on a field goal to actually have more points than shots. Wow. What an amazing concept. We haven't seen that in years. Steph Curry, 26 points per game on just 20 shots, 5.2 rebounds per game, 6.3 assists per game, and nearly 2 steals a game. Steph Curry put pressure on the defense that I don't care. I know Andre Iguodala knocked down a few threes. I guess we can say he defended LeBron James. I guess, if you want to say that, Steph Curry was without question most valuable player, and once again, the sports media gets it wrong. My least valuable player, got to hand out the least valuable player, and there is a number of players that I think were up for this award, and I'll be honest, one player that was at least kind of in the running for this award was Klay Thompson. Where was he at for most of the series? He showed up in game 3, and that was the only time we even saw him. He was a disappearing act for a lot of the series. Not impressed with Klay Thompson. I don't know if it was pressure. I don't know if it was, just feeling the pressure of being in the finals or what exactly that was, but Klay Thompson, kind of a no-show. Did not win the LVP though. Does not win our LVP. Our least valuable player, I'm going to hand over to Cavaliers guard Iman Shumpert. And you might sit there and say, well, I didn't notice him. Yeah, exactly. He had a couple of spots here and there. Iman Shumpert went 11 for 43 in the finals. He shot 26%. Pretty amazing. When the game is big and we need somebody to step up, he didn't really do anything. Played a little bit of defense, I guess, on Steph Curry. I guess I'm putting that in quotation marks, like Andre Iguodala played LeBron James. But Iman Shumpert, least valuable player, he wasn't horrible. He just didn't do anything. I mean, I just barely noticed he was in the game. He was a guy I thought might be able to, swing the series a little bit. He didn't do anything. Got to hand out our postseason Kobe Bryant Award, most shots with the least amount of assists. And who do you think this would go to? Who would you think this could possibly go to? It can only go to one guy. J.R. Smith, Cleveland Cavaliers guard J.R. Smith, he jacked up 77 shots in the NBA Finals while only recording 6 assists. Now, you might hear that, and you might say that doesn't sound that bad. 77 shots and 6 assists. I want you to think about this. Think about watching the NBA Finals this year. And think about this. How many times do you think J.R. Smith touched the ball, period? Like at all? How many times do you think he had the ball in his possession? Like 85 times, maybe? Like 85 times, maybe he had the ball? So 6 of those times, LeBron passed it to him and then went over and asked for it right back. He has a tendency to do that quite a bit. So there's his 6 assists. LeBron goes and gets it right back and then goes and scores. The other 70-some times, he jacked up a shot. He didn't have the ball. He didn't even have the ball that much. How on earth did he put up 77 shots with only 6 assists? Amazing. J.R. Smith. J.R. Smith is a special, special guy. Our Ron Artest Award for being completely delusional and just not having any idea what's even going on. Again, tempting to go with J.R. Smith here. For the record, Ron Artest, what is his name now? I don't know his name. And I'm not even trying to be funny. I don't know his name. Is it Meta World Peace? But then I think he changed it again to like Kung Fu Panda or something. Guy just completely out of his mind. Our delusional award, Ron Artest Award, this year goes to Houston Rockets center Dwight Howard, who after his loss, after they get knocked out in Game 6 to the Golden State Warriors, Dwight Howard says, "Well, you know what? I'm still a champion, and no one can tell me differently." Are you? What are you the champion of? Because I don't have any idea what you're the champion of. I've never seen you win anything ever since ever. So I don't know what you're the champion of, but I guess, I mean, if you want to say you're the champion, yeah, I guess you're the champion of something. Maybe in your backyard, you're the champion. I don't know. Speaking of bizarre self-confidence, do you remember the old SNL skit? Stuart Smiley. He did the self-confidence. I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. And doggone it, people like me. We're going to give out a Stuart Smiley self-confidence award. And we're going to give it to what we keep hearing is the greatest player on the planet, LeBron James, after Game 5, who basically, you could tell, you know, they had just lost Game 5. You could feel the series starting to slip in Game 4. They had lost Game 5. And people were asking him, you know, do you feel less pressure? Are you feeling less pressure now? Because, you know, you don't have much of a supporting cast around you. Do you feel like, you know, even if you lose, it's kind of okay? Because let's be honest, no one expects Cleveland to do anything. And you don't have any help around you. So do you feel less pressure? And he said, no, I just feel confident because I'm the best player in the world. And it just kind of made me feel like he was talking to himself, wasn't he? I mean, I feel confident because I'm good enough. I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me. Got to give that award to LeBron James. Who else could it even go to? Coach of the Year. Now, there's a couple different ways to go on Coach of the Year. Because remember, this is the postseason. We've got to award you just on what you did in the postseason alone. It's not the regular season. I know Atlanta Hawks, Mike Budenholzer, whatever, he won it during the regular season. He got the official award. I said Steve Kerr probably should have got it. For the postseason, who should get the Coach of the Year? Who should get the postseason Coach of the Year? Because obviously, look at Steve Kerr, what he did. I guess you could look at Budenholzer with all the injuries that the Atlanta Hawks had, you know, in the postseason. Maybe he gets a few nods. Jason Kidd with Milwaukee. The fact that he even got Milwaukee into the playoffs, the fact that they even got to the playoffs, it is amazing. And they competed a little bit. It wasn't great, but the fact that he even got there. A couple different ways that you can go with postseason Coach of the Year in the NBA. But I'm going to give my vote to Cleveland Cavaliers coach David Blatt. Because, I mean, when you think about it, look at the job he did coaching up LeBron. LeBron had 30 points a game, 11 rebounds a game, 8.5 assists per game. How would he, I mean, the job that David Blatt did in the postseason, is amazing. I mean, he got this guy who went out, you know, has been swept in the past, looked terrible against the Mavericks down when he was with Miami, got swept when he was in Cleveland the time before. Look at the progress that David Black got out of LeBron James. It's like he turned LeBron James into a player. Well done, coach. Well done, David Black. You know, NBA draft takes place tomorrow night, Thursday night in Brooklyn, New York. I want to talk a little bit about the draft and some of the players, where some of the players may go, a couple of players that I like, a couple of players that maybe I'm not quite as big on. Looking at the draft, first pick of the draft this year, Minnesota Timberwolves own that. Should be fun to see who they're going to pick that will be leaving as soon as his rookie contract runs out. I believe they'll take Karl-Anthony Towns, you know, the big kid out of Kentucky. I like Karl-Anthony Towns a lot. It's weird, though. When you're watching the draft tomorrow night and they talk to Karl-Anthony Towns, and he kind of talks and he gets up there and he discusses about the, I'm just happy to be with the Minnesota Timberwolves. He kind of sounds like a little nerd. He doesn't sound like a big 6'11 beast that he is. Love the way Towns plays. Not only can he go down in the post, be a low post guy, back to the basket, be comfortable down there, he can step out and shoot it from 20 feet. Really, really do like Karl-Anthony Towns. Has a lot of upside to him. He could be a star. Lakers have the number two pick that the NBA made sure to hand them because they wanted to get Los Angeles back to being relevant again. Yeah, I said it. We know what's really going on. Lakers, I think they're going to take Duke freshman Jahlil Okafor, another kid that I really, really like. Jahlil Okafor, and I think he has a long way to go. I think he has a long, long way to go to be a complete player, but I think he could be a star. He's a kid. I hate making these comparisons. I really do. But he's a kid that reminds you just a tiny bit of Tim Duncan. He's comfortable with his back to the basket. He's comfortable with a turn and face. He's a much better passer than I think he gets credit for. The one thing, the one hesitation I have with Jahlil Okafor, I don't think he's a very good defender. I think he's got a long, long way to go as a defender. And don't forget how he got lit up by Frank Kaminsky in that finals game. So I think they'll go with Okafor. I think he's a good fit. When you have Okafor and then you have Julius Randle coming back healthy, I mean, it's almost like they just need to get, I don't know, three other players and they'd be right there. We'll see. We'll see. Philadelphia 76ers are number three on the clock, and I think they're going to take the guard out of Ohio State, D'Angelo Russell. There's a few people that really like Russell's athleticism. I don't think he's that, you know, Russell Westbrook kind of player, but he is an explosive player. He is a guy that can do a number of things. I think the Sixers take him. My only cause for concern on this pick is we've seen that the Sixers just keep drafting big men over and over and over and over. I mean, it would be just like them to take. And now we're hearing that Joel Embiid, the big kid they took last year, might be out already for next season. He like hurt himself sitting on the bench the whole season because he didn't play. He had that foot injury or whatever. Now we're hearing the foot isn't healed. They already have Nerlens Noel. Now they have Embiid who might be hurt. So they might take the Porzingis kid. I'm not going to say for sure that they won't. The big kid out of Latvia, another 6'11 kid. I think Philly is just going to load up their team with 6'11 kids. They don't have anyone that can pass them the ball. They don't have anyone that can shoot the ball from the outside, but they're just going to load up on big kids. That's my only word of caution. I think they probably should take Russell. Wouldn't surprise me if they took the big kid out of Latvia. The New York Knicks. Who knows what the New York Knicks will do? I know there's a lot of people saying they'll take the Porzingis kid out of Latvia. I think that they could take Emmanuel Mudiay, the kid that went. He was scheduled to go. He's an American kid. He was scheduled to go to SMU and play for Larry Brown, and he decided financially that it would be better off for him and his family if he went over to China and played in China for a year professionally and then come back and get drafted. So that's what he did. Put up, I guess, decent numbers in China, but it's China, so it's kind of hard to tell, you know, how comparable that is to the NBA. Turned the ball over way too much, didn't shoot the ball all that well. So really, it kind of sounds like he'd fit in really, really well with Carmelo Anthony in New York. I think that might be the pick for the New York Knicks. The Orlando Magic, they've got a number of different guys that they're trying to figure out what to do with. I think they're getting a nice small nucleus together. But I think they might take, is it Mario Hezonja, the kid out of Croatia? They say Hezonja has a huge, huge upside. I know they're trying to compare him to Dirk Nowitzki. We'll see if that actually comes to pass. But there's a number of draft experts that really like Mario Hezonja, the kid out of Croatia, 6'8", can shoot it from the outside, can go down in the post a little bit. I don't know. I guess we'll see. I've heard too many people try to compare them, you know, to the Dirk Nowitzkis, or here's the next, here's the American Kevin Durant, or you know, the American version. I don't know if I buy all these comparisons exactly, but I get what you're saying. Coming in, by the way, at the number 7 pick would be our local good old, you know, Denver Nuggets. The pick that I would like to see them take is Justice Winslow, the kid out of Duke. I think he is a tough kid. I think he is a scrappy kid that hates to lose. Having said that, I don't think the Nuggets will go anywhere near him because he's a tough kid and he hates to lose. And why would you want that? Whoever the Nuggets pick, just know this, that in 4 or 5 years, they'll be playing for someone else and they'll probably be playing in the finals while the Nuggets are at home watching them on TV. That's how this franchise works. You guys don't realize that's how this franchise works. That's just what happens. Going to give you a couple players that I actually do like in the draft. I told you I do really like both those top two guys. I think that both Okafor and Karl-Anthony Towns have a big, big upside. I think they both could be very, very good players for quite a while. Quietly, I like Sam Decker a little bit. I don't know where he's going to end up, but I think he is way more athletic than his white skin might portray. I know there's a number of people that are down on Willie Cauley-Stein, the big kid out of Kentucky. He has no offense to his game, but can't you just pick and roll and be a really, really good defender? And Frank Kaminsky, obviously the big kid out of Wisconsin. Again, I know he's probably going to be looked down on a little bit because, well, he's white. But don't forget the job he did in carrying that Wisconsin team at times, you know, all the way to the finals in the NCAA tournament. Frank Kaminsky is a lot better than you think. And the thing about Kaminsky that I really like, it's not just that he can go inside and he has a lot of low post moves. He can step outside and he can stretch your defense out a little bit too. Couple players that I would just a little bit cautious about. Miles Turner, the big kid out of Texas. 7-footer that can step outside and shoot it. Hey, I guess maybe not very strong, not very physical, seems to get injured a little bit. I don't know. Kwame Brown. Montrezl Harrell, the guard out of Louisville, just seems like a kid that sometimes kind of forgets what he's doing and kind of forgets exactly where he's at a lot of the times. I don't want that type of player. I don't want a disinterested player when I'm going out and trying to compete at the highest level. And there were times that Harrell just seemed like he kind of forgot exactly where he was at and what he was doing. And Tyus Jones, I know we talked about Tyus Jones a little bit on the show, you know, back with Duke. I think he's a guy that probably is jumping to the NBA before he is ready. Not that great of a shooter. Physically, doesn't have nearly as much as maybe you would want a player in that position to have. Tyus Jones, the good thing is that he does kind of look like the black Adam Carolla. So there is that. As we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Our Daily Dose Top 5 this week. You know, you might have saw on Sunday, U.S. Open at Chambers Bay, which, by the way, the course itself, and I know golfers complain about the course a lot, but that course at Chambers Bay, I mean, Iraq would have looked more lush than that course. Dustin Johnson has a 12-foot eagle putt to win it. Missed it. Okay, hey, 12-foot eagle putt, that's a decent shot. And then he missed like the 2-foot putt to tie it. And then he ended up losing to Jordan Spieth and didn't even make it. So I started to think about, what are the biggest chokes we've ever seen? And I don't know that I'm putting him as a big choker. I genuinely don't know if I'm going to put him down as a big choker. That's a tough, the first putt was tough. Okay, the second one maybe putt him. But what constitutes as a choke? It might be different from one person to the next, because we hear that a lot. Like, you hear that a lot now. We hear, oh, so-and-so choked. Oh, man, did you see the Broncos against the Seahawks? Oh, they totally choked. Oh, did you see the Seahawks against the Patriots? Oh, they totally choked. Here's what constitutes as a choke. If because of the pressure, you fail to do things that you usually are capable of doing, then that's a choke. To go out and say, hey, they outplayed us and they beat it, that's not a choke. To go out and miss a tough putt or a tough play, that's not a choke. That's just, hey, it's a tough play. I've always heard, Scott Norwood, Buffalo Bills kicker. And believe me, I'm the first to make fun of the Buffalo Bills. But I've always heard Scott Norwood in that Super Bowl against the New York Giants that he choked. It was a 48-yard field goal. That's not a gimme by any stretch of the imagination. That's not a choke. That's a tough kick. If you want to get on somebody for choking, start getting on that Kelly gun offense for not getting him down, for a closer kick. That would be more of the choke than it's on, a guy with a single bar, face mask making a 50-yard kick. It's not on him. So let's count down the top five chokes of all time. Number five on our list, the 2004 New York Yankees in the ALS versus the Boston Red Sox. They were up 3-0. In this series, Red Sox can't win. Red Sox don't win anything. They always find a way to lose and to go home early. In those first three games, Yankees versus Red Sox, the combined score was 32-16. This wasn't even a competitive series. The Yankees were crushing the Red Sox. And then they lost 6-4. And then they lost 5-4. And then they lost 4-2. And then they got hammered in game 7, 10-3. Yeah, I'm going to put that on my choke list. Because you had four games to somehow make it right. You had four games to beat a team that you had been beating and beating and beating. 2004 Yankees, one of our top five chokes. Number four on our list. Oh, I remember this one well. The 1998 NFC Championship game. Vikings versus Falcons. Vikings are up 7 late. And they can go up 10 if kicker Gary Anderson, who hasn't missed a field goal all season, just makes a 38-yard field goal. Now, again, I'm not talking about 48. I'm talking about 38. Not only am I talking about 38, you're up 7. This is no pressure. Just step up and knock this through. You hit 38-yard field goals all the time. And you're playing in a dome. It's not like, it was a snowy field or there was wind. You're in a dome. And to say that he shanked that kick, I mean, he wasn't even close. That was a choke job. Gary Anderson missing a 38-yard field goal in the 1998 NFC Championship game definitely gets on our choke list. Number three biggest chokes of all time. I'm going to take you back to 1995, Houston Rockets versus the Orlando Magic in Game 1. In Game 1. Now, the Magic in this game, you had Shaquille O'Neal. You had Nick Anderson, you had Penny Hardaway. That was a pretty good squad that they had. 10 seconds left in the game, up by 3. Nick Anderson gets fouled. Up by 3. Hit 1, make it a 2-possession game. He misses it. Then he misses the second one, too. Okay, but Nick Anderson gets his own rebound and gets fouled. He's going to go to the line for 2 more shots. He misses the third one. And then, just for good measure, he goes ahead and misses the fourth one. Missed 4 free throws within about 20 seconds. Kenny Smith goes down to the other end for Houston. Bangs a 3 at the buzzer. Rockets go on to win in overtime. Nick Anderson, I know you can make free throws. Nick Anderson was a pretty good free throw shooter. That's a choke. That is a choke, folks. Number two on our list, biggest chokes of all time. Gotta be Greg Norman in the 96 Masters. Gotta be Greg Norman. In fact, you know what I thought was kind of strange? And I don't want to bash on the network broadcast too much, but you know, on Sunday, you had this whole situation, with Dustin Johnson and Jordan Spieth and all this. Fox actually had Greg Norman in the booth, and they didn't like ask him. So what's he feeling? What is Dustin Johnson feeling right now? What's going through his head right now? You've been in this situation. If anyone knows the situation, believe me, it is the Shark. Greg Norman knows the situation because in 96, he was up by 6 strokes at the 12th hole. Up by 6 at the 12th. Now, he didn't just let Nick Faldo come back and just, beat him by a putt. He lost by 5 strokes to Nick Faldo. In 6 holes, he dropped 11 strokes. I mean, up 6 at 12? And you lose by 5? You lose and it wasn't even close. Got killed. I've personally, I don't know that I've ever seen a individual meltdown like I saw from Greg Norman in 1996 at the Masters. Absolutely incredible. And our number one choke of all time. You knew the Buffalo Bills were going to end up on this, didn't you? I mean, that's who they are. But they're actually on the other side of it. Our number one choke of all time, the 93 Houston Oilers up 35-3 on the Buffalo Bills and somehow give up 35 straight second half points. Bills go on to win it. I watched that game. I remember watching that game live and just thinking there is no way. But Houston totally changed what they did. They had been attacking. They had been throwing the ball down the field. They had been putting pressure, down the field on the corners, with the great wide receiving core that they had. And they totally stopped and changed what they did. That was the biggest takeaway I have from that. Our number one choke of all time, the 93 Houston Oilers. Hey, next week on the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, we will recap the NBA draft. Going to talk a little bit about who did what, who went where, and maybe even kind of give you an idea of some of the winners and losers in the NBA draft. Got to talk a little bit about Major League Baseball. That is heating up more and more and more. You know, we're going to have a few different shows coming up. I told you, we're getting into the dry season of sports. Don't worry, we've got you covered because we're going to talk a little bit more about some other things. We may get into some greatest all-time lists. We may get into, you know, greatest quarterbacks, or greatest point guards, or greatest boxers of all time. We've got a number of things for you on the Daily Dose. You don't want to miss that. If you get a chance, please, please, please go on to iTunes, go on to Podcast Republic, subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, give us a review. We do appreciate that so much. I know there are a few of you that have done it. I cannot thank you enough. Again, I don't know how, but slowly and surely our numbers keep going up. The bigger we get, the better we get. Thank you for your support. I have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do this without you. Enjoy the NBA draft tomorrow night. Should be a lot of fun. I will talk to you all next week. Have a great week, everybody.